I mentioned that we're in D.C. because we want to be very close to where all the action is taking place. And it's also important to recognize that the AAF constitutes the widest perspective of people that are practitioners in the business, but also supporters from a financial standpoint of the business. And so when lawmakers and legislators want to know about certain things that are going to impact the advertising industry, we're the first call they make because they understand that we can represent these 150 cities from around the country with our professional membership, and they're all involved day to day with what's happening in their own backyards.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Steve Pacheco, President and CEO of the American Advertising Federation, or AAF. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us about AAF.
I appreciate the shorthand. American Advertising Federation is our trade name. We shorthanded that to AAF because that's what most people refer to us as. It's a 120-year-old advertising trade organization. That actually makes us the longest standing professional advertising trade organization in the world. A lot of rich history, a lot of great heritage there. We have a unique grassroots membership base that supports our programs and platforms. We're strategically focused on just four key areas. One is education and lifelong learning, which I know you're a big fan of. Advertising education being chief among that. Another one is events and experiences for the advertising industry. A lot of that is tied to our recognition programs. We do a lot of work around government affairs and policy. That's why we're the only trade organization representing advertising that's headquartered in Washington, D.C. Our offices are on K Street, close to the White House, and we keep great relationships with lawmakers and legislators. That's an important part of what we do. And then diversity, equity, and inclusion in the advertising sector is very, very important to us, too. And for 30 years, we've had the Mosaic Center as a key part of that great work that we do.
So, Steve, who are your members? Are they the ad agencies that place ads or create the creative, or is it the places where you place ads? Tell us about them.
That's actually part of what makes us so unique. We have a grassroots network that spans all of North America. Full scale, it's about 40,000 members all up. 30,000 of those are from our professional clubs. We have AAF clubs on 140 different cities. We're really particularly strong in the Midwest and in the Heartland. We're equally strong on the coast. 140 AAF clubs are operating every day. They work within the framework that we provide as a national organization. They typically have monthly meetings. They also have their own events that serve their community in many ways. And they leverage and tap into their local members to help serve public service projects, community efforts in their areas, things like that, that could be helped by professional advertising. And then I'm on 150 college campuses across North America, which we're really, really excited about. We're trying to grow that to 175 campuses in the next 5 years. And that's got anywhere from 5,000 to 8,000 student members, typically juniors and seniors, who are interested in careers in media, marketing, or advertising. So we have programs and curriculum on those campuses that help those young people learn more about the advertising industry as a destination career. And then at the top level, we have our corporate members. We have about 65 corporate members. That's the TikToks and the Snapchats, Google and the Metas of the world. They help us mostly with funding for our day-to-day projects as a 501c6, but they also help reach out to support our educational work and our development of the next generation of talent for the advertising industry as well. So when you stack all that together, Joanna, we shorthanded to say we have kids, pros, and CEOs.
Ah.
That's a really nice way to look at it. We have members that are 18 years old, and we have members that are 85 years old. So that's quite a wide range and spectrum of perspectives that we give back to the advertising industry.
Steve, we are surrounded by advertising, right? You go on the web, there's advertising. You walk down the street, there's advertising. You open up a publication, there's advertising. What's new in advertising?
It's a great question, Joanna. And the latest research shows that a typical consumer is subjected to 3,000 to 4,000 ad messages per day.
Per day?
Per day. And typically, you only remember the very best or the very worst.
Right.
And so I've been around long enough to where I've seen, you know, the 60-second TV commercial now be reduced to as little as a five-second interstitial or a quick pop-up or a pre-ad before you get to see the content that you came to see. So all of that lends itself to the short attention span of our nation and our consumers and how people take in media and how they filter things and how they're able to discern what's of real interest to them versus things that they don't want to spend a moment of their time with. So you're seeing a lot of branded partnerships. You're seeing a lot of collaborations. You're seeing a lot of things that have a bit of what we used to call borrowed interest, where you take a celebrity or someone of popularity and combine them with a powerful brand in a unique way. You're seeing an awful lot of this across the advertising industry. You're seeing a lot of brand ambassadors where they'll name a person of influence as a brand ambassador to help move the brand along. And that's part of picking up the slipstream of all the influence that that person has in the marketplace. So social media has come a long way. And I'm proud to say that at the AAF, we have a lot of our social media platforms on board as corporate partners. They're helping us learn more about that and how that's changing the overall perspective on advertising and plans for advertising. And so we're staying current on that as best we can. On the other end of the spectrum, you've still got the epic things like the Super Bowl advertising every February, which is the biggest night in advertising from a perspective of just pure eyeballs.
Right.
Millions of dollars invested in those single spots and an awful lot of attention paid to the advertising and the epic productions that are Super Bowl ads.
Well, those Super Bowl ads are really interesting because sometimes you never see them again. Like they're played once, right?
In my professional career, I had created 12 consecutive Super Bowl ads for FedEx, my former employer. And I can tell you from that perspective, it's high stakes and high stress to produce a winning commercial. And there were a couple that only ran once or twice, but most of them are the launch of a new campaign or something that's going to have a lot more continuity to it post-Super Bowl. The trend nowadays is that people are pre-selling in their Super Bowl spot, teasing it earlier, showing the entire spot in some cases before it airs. And that takes away some of the excitement energy around, you know, the unveil.
Right.
So it's different everywhere for every brand.
Well, let's turn to your career because I want to hear all about it. How do you get to become president and CEO of AAF?
Well, I'll tell you this. I call myself a reluctant CEO. I never set out to be the CEO of a trade organization, right? And yet, when the opportunity came about, I couldn't say no to it. I've been involved with the AAF for over 40 years in one way or another. My first instance with them was in the 1980s while a college student at Memphis State University. My career counselor there suggested that I participate in this AAF program called the National Student Ad Competition.
Oh.
Shorthanded to NSAC.
Steve, why did he recommend that to you? What did he see in you?
I think he saw Ron Spielberger was my advisor back then. And while I was not a disciplined student, is what I would say, he saw a lot of energy and passion in me when I got to talk about advertising. And I was taking two or three core advertising classes. Quite honestly, I thought that was the easiest way to get a degree at the time.
Mm.
The degree itself was in journalism. They did not have a true degree in advertising back then. So my bachelor's degree is in journalism. And I thought if I could be a great writer, maybe that's the way into advertising. So he told me about this AAF program and how the Memphis State team needed to be represented. And he wanted me to lead it as a junior that year. And so he sort of insisted that I do it. He voluntold me to do it. And next thing I know, I had to put together a sort of a ragtag bunch of other students. And I brought in some friends and all. And that year we worked on a campaign for Maxwell House Coffee.
Oh.
1984. at Memphis State University. And we got to work on this pitch, and we spent all semester working on it. And we presented at the district level and scored pretty well. It came in second in the district. And that's when the bug bit me. And I said, this is a career that I should really pursue. And I'm having fun doing this.
Wow. So you just kept working in many advertising positions and volunteered with the AAF?
I did. And so my first internship was with the local newspaper. I turned that into a full-time job. And then at one point I had a local ad agency in Memphis, Tennessee that I was an equity partner in. And at age 27, I was named as the youngest president ever for AAF Memphis, the local chapter of the AAF network. Typically, most presidents had been mid-30s or early 40s, but they saw something in me and they said, yeah, you can be the president. So at age 27, I became the president of the local chapter and they handed over the keys and I didn't crash the car. Somehow it worked out. And we actually had a really good fun run at it, and we did things a lot differently than they had been done historically. And I'm pleased to say that we got membership up that year. We had a really well-attended American Advertising Awards and we brought in some great speakers. And I was really enthralled with the opportunity to have a leadership position at that young age for an industry that I care deeply about.
Boy, there sure is a lesson there about involving young people in leadership positions, isn't there?
There is. And at the AAF, we pride ourselves on having so many available opportunities for our volunteer leadership to step up and be involved in their local communities. They know the communities better than we do. And so they're able to activate it at a local level in meaningful and powerful ways. And we just think that's the best way to go about it. So we survive at the local level, the district level, and then at the national level. So once I became president of the local group, I actually served the district as an ad judge, as a speaker, as an advisor in many ways. After being on their corporate roster for about 7 or 8 years, representing my former employer, I was named as the National Board of Directors Chair in 2013. And so that gave me an opportunity from the corporate perspective to see how the organization was run, to see what they needed, to see how they could be helped along, to see how corporate involvement could support them better. And I had a wonderful run in 2013 for a year being board chair. And then I went back to my professional career. And then in June of 2019, they had an opening for the CEO position. And I was recommended for it, vetted very thoroughly, I'll add. And at that point, I had taken an early retirement package. I was not going to get back into a real full-time career move. But because this organization meant so much to me, I felt like I could offer them something and I wanted to get back.
That is quite the change. You were involved with the organization as a volunteer, you were board chair, but it is different actually running a nonprofit, right? An association. How do you make that leap and how do you essentially learn a new craft, right? Which is the business of running an association. Quite different.
And as your audience knows, yes, those skills aren't necessarily transferable.
And not every board member makes a successful staffer, I think my audience would say.
Yeah, and I've seen instances of both sides of that as well. I think it's fair to say, first of all, I worked for very much for-profit companies while I was in corporate America. I worked at two Fortune 500 companies, and I learned a lot of skills and experience during those years that I kept filing away and said, you know, there's got to be a greater purpose for all this that I'm learning as I go through corporate America here. But the experience all around the organization gave me this amazing perspective of not only where we've been, where we are, but where we might could take this organization, you know, and how to power up the volunteer part of our organization and how to lean on our corporate sponsors and partners for that. But I also wanted to apply basic business principles to the running of the organization and to really put into focus the things that had made me so successful in corporate America. And so at the end of the day, it's just basic business applications and minding the store, as my grandfather used to say, and keeping up with everything that's important. So I was able to put all those skills to work for an organization that I had deep passion and I cared about in great order. And I also had all this energy that was normally expended in my corporate role that I wanted to give back to, again, the career that had been so good to me.
So you take the helm. It's summer 2019, and then this thing called a pandemic hits. Wow, you're starting fresh. They pulled you out of retirement. What's that like?
Yeah, I joke, and I try to see the other side of it now, but I had a 5-year plan going in, right? And COVID erased 3 of those years. So We were heavily reliant on live events, including our Hall of Fame and Hall of Achievement. About 33% of our revenue came in from live events. And so for 2.5 years, that was completely shuttered. And so was the revenue. So we couldn't pivot quickly enough to do virtual award shows and things like that. We learned as we went about how to stand some of those things up, and our tech got a lot better during those years. But it was really, really hard to replicate the resources that we typically could expect to come in from our live events. So that forced us into learning more about virtual events, about Zoom calls with our chapters, about staying in touch, about more frequent communication with our clubs and chapters. And we spent that downtime really formulating a plan on how to be of value to our membership, how to offer support and resources for our clubs and chapters. Remember, a lot of these clubs have monthly luncheons and monthly learn sessions that are typically live, and the social aspect of our membership is really important to our members. And absent that, they weren't able to have that.
Right.
So we started having monthly Zoom calls with all of our clubs and sharing different ideas and webinars and opportunities for them to learn more. And we kept the channels of communication open and really doubled down on communicating what we were doing. And nobody knew when it was going to be over or when we could return to normalcy. So we kept that cadence for as long as it took. And then when we came back live, I'll never forget our first national conference after coming out of post-pandemic, we took everyone to Nashville, Tennessee. We move our conference around to a different city every year. And we didn't have high expectations of how many people would travel in. This is in June, post-pandemic. I think we had under 300 people come to Nashville for that national conference.
That's pretty good.
We thought it was great, and we were pretty happy with it. And then we've grown since then. And for next year's conference, we're expecting 500. We're expecting to return back to healthy, normal numbers.
Wow. Well, let's turn to AAF. So you said when you were describing AAF that you've got a big emphasis on nurturing and cultivating the next generation of professionals and leaders in the advertising space. So why is that important? Most of my trade association clients are all about, like, if you will, corporate matchmaking, right?
Sure.
Finding your vendors, making sure that the profession is protected. But you've got a big focus on professional development. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, and full disclosure here, Joanna, part of that is personal for me because, again, as a young student in Memphis, Tennessee, which is not the hotbed for advertising, I assure you, it was difficult for me to make connections with the people who were making advertising happen on a national scale. And honestly, without the AAF, I probably would have not had the career that I had.
Hmm.
So the Ron Spielbergers of the world at Memphis State, who connected me with that opportunity, I'll be forever grateful for, because that opened up my world to, wait, there's an organization that really supports students and does a program like this for them and helps them connect with meaningful people who can create job opportunities for them and introduce them to people that are hiring and all these other things that skip a step or five when you're trying to get your first job into a dynamic career like advertising. And so I saw a need for that. There's no other organization that's doing that to the scale that we are.
Hmm.
And so also coming out of the pandemic, I had a young son graduate in the middle of the pandemic. We were planning to go to New York and watch him graduate and have dinners and celebrations and everything else. And my son graduated on a Zoom call. That didn't feel right to me, you know?
I know.
And so I feel bad for this current generation because they've had to be so resilient and they've had to learn so much. And so coming out of the pandemic, again, part of our strategic imperative was that we need to double down on all of the amazing opportunities that we have to connect our corporate partners here with our students. And so we do that in a number of ways that I'm particularly proud of. We do a student advertising career conference that's coming up in November in New York. We'll have over 150 students from all around the country there for a 4-day immersive experience. They'll go and visit ad agencies. They'll go and visit media companies. They'll go and visit client-side companies. There's a recruiter's fair the last day up.
Wow.
It's a full-scale opportunity for them to learn inherently more about the advertising business than they might in the epicenter of advertising, which is New York. We have our most promising students. Every year, we honor 50 of the most promising students from around the country. Academic advisors help us identify those young people. We bring them to New York for an immersive experience. We also have mentorships and internships with our corporate partners. And the premier program that we do, Joanna, is a thing called the National Student Ad Competition, which I mentioned earlier. And we've had brands like Procter & Gamble's Tide. Last year was AT&T. And I'm really proud to say that this year, the NFL is our sponsor for that. So our students get to work on the NFL brand all semester and then present their pitches. It's a national competition, and the final eight teams will represent themselves in May in Austin at our national conference.
Wow. And is the emphasis on professional development and student development because workforce development is an issue, as in like the profession just doesn't have enough people, which I'm actually seeing in other trades?
That's a key part of it. And the other components are that there used to be teams of people that would go out and do talent recruitment for the agencies and clients of the world. And those teams have been minimized through everything. So the industry looks to us, the AAF, for development of those young people. They also appreciate, I think, deeper than they communicate sometimes, that we give students what I call a real-world education. We don't sugarcoat it. We don't bubble wrap them. We don't tell them everything's going to be sunshine and roses. We give them real exposure to the real world of advertising, which, quite honestly, some days is brutal.
Yeah.
But we don't mislead them, and we don't tell them that everything's going to be rays of sunshine. We let them know that they'll be working 60-hour weeks and that they'll put in extra effort and that they'll be stressed to the max on certain deadlines and things, because I think that's what really shapes and makes for a great advertising careerist, is just knowing that what you see on TV and in film is not necessarily a true representation of what the business looks like.
Well, it's also the result of a lot of hard work. And you got to know that that's what happens.
It is. And my work ethic personally has never been called into question, because I think regardless of what your aptitude or your IQ is, if you outwork someone, that always gets you extra recognition.
Yeah.
And making yourself helpful and resourceful in the advertising world is always going to put you heads and shoulders above the next candidate.
Steve, let's turn to something different. The website has a big emphasis on your policy and government work. So what types of issues do you advocate on?
Wow, that changes almost weekly, Joanna.
Yeah, I bet.
I mentioned that we're in D.C. because we want to be very close to where all the action is taking place. And it's also important to recognize that the AAF constitutes the widest perspective of people that are practitioners in the business, but also supporters from a financial standpoint of the business. And so when lawmakers and legislators want to know about certain things that are going to impact the advertising industry, we're the first call they make, because they understand that we can represent these 150 cities from around the country with our professional membership, and they're all involved day to day with what's happening in their own backyards. Once every other year, we do an advertising day on the Hill, which I'm sure you saw on our website.
Yep.
We fly in people, hopefully from every one of the 50 states. And then we take meetings with senators, lawmakers, legislators, pages, assistants, and we let them know what is happening back in their home state from the advertising perspective. We share with them an economic indicator of how many jobs are powered up by advertising in their market, and we give them updates on how important the advertising industry is in their own hometown market, state by state. We also give them our briefings on where things are headed. And to your question about the actual policy work, it seems to be focused right now on four key areas. AI is obviously number one, and the restrictions that are going to be placed around that, everyone's following very closely. It's like the early days of the internet and the Wild Wild West.
Oh, yes.
Where there are no rules, you just do what you want.
Yeah.
And so that'll be something that everyone will be tracking very closely as we go forward. That's also connected to data and data usage and limits on your data and your personal data and how it's used. So we've got a distinct opinion on that. Privacy is a big, big piece of it as well. And we've got some rulings and some policy platform pieces on that. And then advertising to children is a hot topic as well.
Mm.
We are supporters of KRU, Children's Advertising Research Unit, and we sit on a couple of different boards that advise and recommend the right way to put in guardrails and parameters to make advertising to children a little more regulated.
Steve, there are European regulations, right, about all this stuff, and there's federal legislation here in the U.S., and there's legislation coming out of California. What's unique about the legislative landscape with regard to advertising in the U.S. that you're trying to help shape or educate lawmakers about? What do they need to know?
That's a great question. And in my experience, Joanna, lawmakers and legislators are so far removed from the day-to-day business of advertising that they just don't quite understand the basics of it. You can go back and watch Mark Zuckerberg being interrogated by senators, and one of them says, Mr. Zuckerberg, how do you make money?
Right.
And it became a meme because clearly that person didn't get it or understand what the support beams of Zuckerberg's enterprise were. And that's who we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Fortunately, their assistants and their pages and their support staff is typically under 30, and they understand more about the advertising business, social media, experiential marketing, advertising, those things. They have to inform a lot of their superiors and seniors about what's happening in the real world. And so we do an awful lot of educational work just to be able to explain in very, very basic terms how the business of advertising is created and what it impacts. Some days that's easier than other days. And we much rather play offense than defense. And because of our unique perspective, we weigh in on local matters, certainly state by state matters at the regional level. And then at the national level, there will be in our lifetime a national privacy law that impacts advertising. And we're key components to helping make that happen and doing it in the right spirit and the right mind. And so we're helping take all of those perspectives that are included in our membership base and roll those up to something that can be of national impact. But I will tell you this, that the current administration and the past three administrations do not understand enough about the business of advertising to be making sweeping laws and changes that impact it. The worst possible example is an ad tax on digital advertising or any form of advertising. It's never been taxed. It shouldn't be taxed. We have a firm stance on that. It's nothing more than a money grab by the states who are looking for opportunities to fill their overages. And it seems like a very convenient way to place a 1% tax on every piece of advertising that impacts their state. It's impractical, it's unjust, and it's got a lot of problems with it. And so we advocate for no tax on advertising, and they have been doing that for over 25 years.
Wow. And with all the states coming up with their own proposed legislation, that keeps you really busy. Steve, it's August 2025. I have a 21-year-old who happens to be interested in engineering, but if he came home and said, Mom, what's new and interesting? He knows I work with associations. Why would a young person today go into advertising?
I'm so glad you asked that because that's a big part of my job, Joanna. And not everybody is as passionate about advertising as I am. We are in the middle of some of the most fast-paced and dynamic changes that the advertising industry has seen over the last 50 years. I really believe that. And as someone who has toiled on both sides of the equation, I think it creates a lot of great opportunities for people who are smart and creative and that want to figure out their path in the advertising space. And we're here to offer opportunities for them. So anyone who's interested, I'd love for you to go to www.aaf.org. And there you can plug in and learn more about everything else that we do.
We'll put a link in the show notes. Steve, we're going to have you back in the future.
I'd love to come back.
Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Joanna. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.